Throwing frisbees toward hanging metal baskets may sound like a diverting hour or two to you, but for some, disc golf is much more than a hobby. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowa has more disc golf courses per capita than any other state. Today, we'll talk with a professional disc golfer and a representative of the Iowa Disc Golf Tour. We'll take a look at other alternative sports as well. Gary Greenlee is the Associate Director of Intramural Sports at Iowa State University, where students are studying hard and playing sports like broomball, badminton, or even curling late into the night. And then we'll go from the unusual to the truly bizarre. Central Empire Wrestling, based in Wellman, Iowa, has brought professional wrestling back to its roots. They're doing a small-town circuit through much of the state. Chalk up your hands and join the conversation after this news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Charity Nebbe. When I was a kid, disc golf was called frisbee golf, and it was fairly new and something that mainly teenagers with frisbees played on occasion. Over the years, the sport has grown and changed, and now many of the people you see on a disc golf course are carrying a specially designed bag that holds a selection of different discs designed for different kinds of shots. It's serious business these days. Shane Stewart is a representative of the Iowa Disc Golf Tour, and Tanner Duncan is the top-ranked professional disc golfer in the state of Iowa. Hello, gentlemen.
Good morning. Hi.
Thank you so much for being with me today. And Tanner, I want to start with you. When did you start playing disc golf?
I started in 1997 in college up at University of Northern Iowa.
And when you started playing, what got you out there on the course?
Just some friends going out to enjoy the day. You know, it was just a good way to recreate and economical.
And what hooked you?
I started playing golf when I was young, and I realized the competition element was very real, and there was a lot of room for growth, so I just spent a lot of time doing it.
When you go out to a disc golf course now, tell me what you take with you.
As far as gear?
Yeah.
I just take a bag of discs, anywhere from 15 to 20 different discs, and usually I go out to practice. I don't play a lot of just casual rounds. I work on different shots, different skills, and things like that now.
15 to 20 different discs sounds like a lot. Are they all different?
Yeah. You know, some might be the actual same mold, but there's different conditions and different flight characteristics.
How do you decide which one you're going to use?
Just depends on the shot, the hole, what kind of situation I get in, if I'm in the woods, if I'm out open in the wide open, or the biggest factor is usually the wind.
When did you start playing competitively?
2001. I played my first singles tournament, the Des Moines Challenge, in the intermediate amateur division.
And how was that experience?
I won.
Just the first time out, huh?
Yep. I was hooked from there on for competition.
Well, Shane Stewart is also with us from the Iowa Disc Golf Tour. Shane, how long has there been an Iowa Disc Golf Tour?
Since 2005.
So this is a fairly new thing.
Yeah, definitely. The PDGA has had tournaments for many years, but the Iowa Tour just came around in 2005.
And how did you get involved?
I'm hanging out in the parks one day, and we saw the baskets, and we just kind of were watching what people were doing and grabbed some Frisbees and started throwing.
And when was that?
I believe it was 98.
All right. And are you a competitive disc golfer as well?
No, I'm a disc golfer, but not very competitive.
How did you get involved in the tour?
You know what? I also work with a program called EDGE, Educational Disc Golf Experience, and we wanted to try to bring more disc golf into the state of Iowa and bring it into the schools. And so we created the Iowa Tour, where we raise money to help bring disc golf into the schools.
Why do you think it's a good idea to bring disc golf into the schools? What does it have to offer for kids?
It's great for them. The exercise is tremendous. Walking around the courses, not only that, just getting out and enjoying the day and not sitting behind the TV all day.
And there are lots of things you can do that take you away from the television, but what is it about disc golf in particular that you think can get kids excited?
Just the thrill of beating the person next to you is great.
It's pretty dynamic. You can you see how these things fly and how different you can different shots you can make. It's very dynamic, and kids really get hooked right away to this sport.
If you are a disc golfer, if this is something that you've done casually, or if it's something that's really gotten you hooked and you're competing with your friends, or maybe you're competing on the tour, give us a call and let us know why you participate. The number to call is 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Shane, with the disc golf tour, how many events are there in a year?
With the Iowa Tour, we run 12 events every year.
And how many participants would you say are involved in all of these events?
At each event, you're looking at anywhere from 60 to 90 competitors.
And are they usually the same competitors that go to all 12, or are you drawing different people?
We do draw from different crowds. It just depends. It's spread out across the state, so it just depends on where we're at.
And, Tanner, I introduced you as the top-ranked professional disc golfer in the state, but let's talk about that term, professional disc golfer. This is not your job.
No. No, there's not quite enough money in it for me to do it full-time.
And I was looking at the disc golf tour page, and it looks like there's really not a lot of money in it at all. I think, what, $2,500 in prizes handed out over the past year?
Correct.
Okay, so this is not a sport to participate in because this is going to make you the Tiger Woods of disc golf.
Not money-wise, no.
How does the Iowa Tour compare to tours in other states?
Money-wise?
Yeah.
Actually, with tours in other states, the Iowa Tour is actually part of the PDGA tours, which you're going to have different events. I believe we had in 2009, we had almost 3,000 events, I'm guessing. And the money, I mean, if you look at the world championships, like in 2004, we had world championships here in Des Moines, and the pro purse for just that one event was over $80,000.
Tanner, do you participate in events outside of Iowa as well?
Yeah, you know, I kind of take a look around, see, you know, where the big money is, how many players are going to be there. There's qualifications to be had for U.S. championships, which I'll participate in next month. There'll be probably close to $100,000 purse there. So there are some large tournaments where you can that are fairly lucrative. But for the most part, I moved to Des Moines to set me up in the middle of basically the heart of disc golf.
Brian is on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hello, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So you're a disc golfer as well?
Yes, since 94.
And what keeps you going back?
Well, it's a competition of the beating the person next to you, as your one guest had mentioned. And when I started playing, there was only a couple courses in Cedar Rapids, and now I think we're up to four or five just in this area. And the thing I like about it is, you know, compared to regular golf, is, you know, a lot of the courses are untouched. It's like walking through the trails the way they were before the disc golf was even added to it.
So it's something to do in addition to going for a walk in the woods.
Exactly. And I've got my daughter into it. And I was interested in, well, your one guest had mentioned about getting the disc golf into the schools. I think that's a great thing for our kids. And that was one of the reasons I got my daughter into it, that was to keep her out from in front of the TV also.
And do you find that it's a sport that is easy to do with your daughter because it's accessible? You don't have to start with a lot of heavy equipment or expensive equipment?
Yeah, because I got her started off with just one of my extra discs, and she was lucky enough to end up finding her own while we were out playing. So sometimes you can actually come out ahead.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
You can join the conversation as well at 866-780-9100. Mark is on the line from Kansas City. Hello, Mark.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good.
What would you like to talk about?
I was just driving through Iowa right now, and I heard your program. I'm actually from Kansas City, but there's a bunch of courses down there, too, and I had no idea that I heard you say that Iowa has the most courses per capita. That was pretty interesting to hear.
Yeah, well, Iowa actually ranks third in the number of courses overall behind California and Texas, but not very far behind. We do have a lot of courses. Shane, why do you think we have so many courses?
Des Moines is a mecca of disc golf. Ever since 04, it's really blown up. When we held world championships here, disc golf's really blown up in central Iowa.
And do you have, if Mark's traveling through, do you have a course, a particular favorite that you could recommend to him?
Yeah, Pickard Park in Indianola.
Pickard Park in Indianola. Why is that one your favorite?
It's a lot of golf shots, true golf shots. You can really get yourself in trouble, or if you play smart, you stay out on the fairways and do what you need to do.
All right. Mark, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
And Tanner, do you have a favorite course?
I like Ewing Park down in the south side of Des Moines. It's just it's a big, beautiful park. We're lucky enough to have a course there. I lived down on that side of town when I first moved to Des Moines, and it's always been my favorite.
All right. Trent is on the line from Des Moines. Hello, Trent.
Hi, how's it going?
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Oh, you know, I just like to weigh in this whole Frisbee golf thing. I've been playing for a lot of years, and you know, it's fun, and I've seen it. You know, I got to see the sport kind of, you know, like have a big, well, I don't know what you'd like to call it, surge. But, yeah, it's just super fun, and I'm glad to see it. It's getting big.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Trent. And I want to ask both Tanner and Shane, you can start. What do you see as the future of disc golf?
You know, we've been asking that for years, kind of wondering where it's going to go and the road it's going to take. We just keep driving it and hoping for the best. It's starting to show up in the colleges as teams are playing against each other, and we're just hoping to keep pushing it.
All right. And how about you, Tanner?
You know, you see a huge spectrum of players. You know, you have retired guys. I see, you know, a group of those guys out on the course if I'm lucky enough to have a day off in the afternoon. And, you know, again, you know, the kids are picking it up quick. It's very inexpensive. I wish I would have had it when I was in middle school and high school. And, you know, for me, it's always been a grassroots thing. It's very, very grassroots. And I kind of see it always going that way, kind of the way skateboarding and snowboarding did. Whether it blows up or not on the national stage, I'm not so concerned with that. I think people that play it love it, and the people involved are some of the most interesting and unique individuals I've ever met.
And what is your ultimate goal as a professional disc golfer?
To win a major.
All right. Well, good luck with that. Thank you so much
for
being here today. Tanner Duncan, the top-ranked professional disc golfer in the state of Iowa, and Shane Stewart, a representative of the Iowa Disc Golf Tour. Coming up next, disc golf is one of many sports that students at Iowa State University can play through the intramural sports program there. We'll be talking about that program and taking your calls in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and disc golf is just one of many sports that can be played by students at Iowa State University. They can also play flag football, sand volleyball, basketball, broomball, dodgeball. They can try their hand at curling and many other sports. Gary Greenlee is the Associate Director of Intramural Sports and Facility Operations at ISU. If you played or play intramural sports in college, give us a call and tell us why. What sports did you participate in, and how did it add to your college experience or distract you from your studies? The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Hello, Gary.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm doing just great.
Iowa State offers a huge array of intramural sports, about, what, 45 different sports altogether?
Yes, 45 each year for all of our students.
Why is the program so large?
Number one, it's the students. It's our participation. If we didn't have that kind of participation, we wouldn't be offering all those different sports. So they keep requesting more items, more sports, more activities, so we try to do the best we can to provide them with as much as possible.
Do you have a good estimate for how many students participate in all of the intramural sports put together?
We've had a few different surveys done over the years, and roughly 75% of our students participate in intramurals at some time while they're here at Iowa State.
So you have what, 15 to almost 20,000 students every year, possibly?
Yep, pretty much.
Who is eligible to participate in intramural sports?
Any registered students is eligible, plus any faculty, staff, and spouses. And then we also let affiliates such as the Research Park participate in our programs.
And how do people get involved?
All they have to do really is go to our website. It's pretty up-to-date and pretty easy to navigate. You go to our website, look at the list of our different 45 sports that we offer. When they get highlighted, as in when their entries are available to be processed, you just click on the link, follow the instructions, and we'll process your entry and send you the schedule, and you're off playing.
What are your most popular sports?
It would definitely be broomball. Broomball is the number one sport. We always say that you're not an Iowa State student until you play broomball at 2 in the morning.
All right. And for those who didn't attend Iowa State University, what is broomball?
Broomball is hockey on tennis shoes. You play with a small, like size 3 soccer ball. You've got a stick in your hand, which is more shaped like a rubber-headed broom. And you slip and slide and try to hit that ball in the goal, just like hockey, except there's no skates. So it's a lot of slipping and sliding and a lot of fun.
And it's the most popular. How many teams are there?
For the men and women, we'll have about 300 teams, and then we'll have co-ed in the spring, and we'll have another 200 and some teams. So we'll have over 500 broomball teams.
And you mentioned 2 a.m. games. When are these games played, and why in the middle of the night?
That's the uniqueness of it, and that's the fun of it. That's why we do it. It's all for the fun of it. Basically, the ice rink that we have in town, there's kind of a pecking order, and we've got the open skating, we've got the youth skating, we've got the youth hockey, we've got Iowa State men and women's hockey. So we've got a lot of different users that use the ice rink, and college students, intramurals, I wouldn't say we're last in the pecking order, but it just fits into that schedule really nice where students have class during the day. They've got other intramurals probably till 7, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. So the ice time that they give to us that's available is roughly around 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And to get in 400 or 500 teams, we got to play until about 2 or 3 in the morning.
What do you think having all of these intramural sports does for the student body at Iowa State?
I think it's that championship T-shirt that they all want to have. And it changes every year, a new design every year. You got to play to win. They see them all over campus. They want to know how to get one. So we offer 40, 50 different sports where they can all do it. We have different skill levels. So the really high skilled players can play and win and compete. And the really, really, and I mean really low skill level people play in Class D. And they just want to have fun. They just want to play. They watch everybody else play on TV. This is their chance to be a champion, too. So we have a lot of different skill levels. So it doesn't matter what your level of skill is. If you're interested, want to play, you've got a chance to win. Everybody likes to compete. We offer a lot of different variety for everybody. So it's just appealing to all of our students.
If you played intramural sports when you were a student in college, maybe you played broomball at Iowa State, or maybe you played ultimate frisbee at the University of Iowa, whatever it was that got you involved as a student, give us a call and let us know why you participated and what it added to your college experience to have this kind of program available to you. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Now, of course, on any college campus, you have a bunch of highly skilled athletes. You have the track runners, and you've got football players and basketball players and people who actually, you know, play sports, not professionally, but who play sports as part of their academic program at Iowa State. How do you keep people who are really highly skilled from making these sports unfair for the people who aren't as skilled?
Basically, if you're a varsity athlete, and let's say volleyball in particular. If you're a varsity athlete here at Iowa State, you cannot play intramural volleyball while you're an athlete at Iowa State. So once your eligibility is all over with, you can play intramurals the following year. And then we have in our rules that you have to play in our top skill level division. And usually after you're done competing on a competition level at the Division I level, I wouldn't say your skills drop off, but you're not practicing every day with the team. Your skills maybe drop off a little bit. So our highly skilled group, that's against people that play all the time, and they're really highly skilled as well. So we let those Division I athletes play the following year, you know, in their sport. But it's more like the football players that want to play softball. that doesn't mean necessarily mean they've got an advantage because they're a football player and they're playing intramural softball. So it's only in the area of their specialty that we kind of watch and limit what they can do and what level they'd play at.
I was looking through your list of sports that you offer, and I was surprised to see Texas Hold'em on the list. You have poker offered as one of the sports in intramurals. Why do you include poker in your offerings?
We kind of pay attention nationally what's going on around the country, and when Texas Hold'em really took off, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, we had some students that were interested and asked us about that. So I wouldn't say we do a little research, but we start watching TV a little more, starting to see what's going on around the country, and it was really, really popular. So we thought we'd give it a try. We got permission from Iowa State, you know, and I wouldn't necessarily say the gaming association, but Iowa State, since it's a department, it's regulated with our professional and our staff. We don't give out cash awards. There's no entry fees. The only thing you would win is a T-shirt. We're allowed to be one of the few people on campus that are allowed to play Texas Hold'em and offer that event. And our first year, and I can't remember when it was, but it was about 5, 6 years ago, we had around 400 people that played in our first tournament.
Wow. And how has it grown?
I would say that as Texas Hold'em has kind of faded in the national light, because it's not as popular as it used to be, I don't believe, we're down to about 120 people that played this last month. About 2 weeks ago, we played another tournament.
All right, so that one is on the wane. You may have to look for something new after that, right?
We always look for something hot, but I think Texas Hold'em will hang on here for a few more years.
All right. Abby is on the line. Hello, Abby.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. So you played intramural sports?
I did. I'm driving through Iowa on my way back to Purdue University, where I am a grad school, and I play intramurals in the grad division, grad and faculty division. But when I was at Northwest Missouri State during my undergrad, I won championships in volleyball, basketball, and volleyball, which was kind of the hot sport when I was in school there. But I wanted to agree with your guest about the T-shirt. The intramural championship T-shirt was definitely the biggest thing on campus. A lot of fraternities and sororities have rules that you can't give out your letters to boyfriends and girlfriends to wear, but ours was you couldn't give out your intramural championship T-shirt.
you had to earn it, huh?
That's right.
So other than hoping to win that coveted T-shirt, what else kept you playing intramural sports?
Well, I think in college it's hard to get in your physical activity. You spend so much time studying and socializing that this was just a good set time to go out and have fun and sweat a little bit and, you know, kind of, if you played high school sports, you missed out on that when you got to college. So it just offered a lot of benefits physically, too.
And for those of us who don't know, what is or was volleyball?
Volleyball is like volleyball, but you play it in the racquetball court. So you're allowed to hit the ball off the walls, and there's just two of you on each side of the net in the middle. So,
all right. Sounds like something my brother and I would have made up.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure that's probably how it started in the beginning.
All right. What do you play now?
I play volleyball out at Purdue now, but it's a good time playing with the grad and faculty also.
All right. Abby, thank you so much for your call today.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And you talked about, Gary, paying attention to trends when you pick sports. Are there any things that are on your radar right now that you're thinking might need to be added to your program?
Really, with our 45 different sports, we're pretty much maxed out for our facilities and availability and where we can play our sports. So if something comes in new, something probably has to leave. And with the 45 sports we have now, they're all popular with, you know, 100, you know, team entries or 200-300 team entries. So it's got to be something really hot on the screen for us to do. I really don't have anything in mind right now, but I can say whenever the Olympics roll around, everybody starts watching the Olympics, whether it be Winter Olympics, Summer Olympics, and they like to do whatever's on TV and on the Olympics. And the best example would be curling.
When did you add curling?
30 years ago.
and it stuck around this whole time?
Oh, we've always had curling, but every four-year cycle when they get it on TV, and recently on TV in the Olympics, the last, say, two or three Olympics, they really highlight curling, it seems like.
Yeah.
So our curling's gone up to 100 teams. and it is our most social. It's a kind of a mixed sport, not a co-ed, but it's a mixed sport. You can have any combination of male and female on your team. It's the most social, most interactive, most hooting and hollering and fun that you'll ever see. And it's recreation in its truest form because nobody knows how to play. No one's any good, but they just love to get out there and say, you know, down the road, hey, I played curling.
Well, and who knows, you may be launching some Olympic careers.
You never know.
Curling's something you can do for a long time, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's not that demanding, and you just need a sheet of ice and some other people that know how to curl with you, and away you go.
If you played intramural sports in college or are playing intramural sports in college or grad school or as a faculty or staff member now, give us a call and let us know why you're involved. 866-780-9100. What were your favorite sports? Maybe it was ultimate frisbee or volleyball, or let us know. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I also see dodgeball on the list of sports that you've offered. How long have you been offering dodgeball?
Dodgeball's in its about its fifth year here at Iowa State, and thank goodness for the movie because, you know, that was one of those trends and hot things out there to do. So we thought, what the heck, we'll give it a try too. And we started out with 250 teams, and we're up to close to 300 now. And that comes up here in about another month. We'll start playing dodgeball.
It's interesting because a lot of us, you know, dodgeball used to be very common in school, and then it was banned from a lot of schools. So college may be your only opportunity to play dodgeball now.
Well, I'd say a lot of people offered a lot of suggestions on how to play and the rules and what ball to use. They like to play with that little red rubber ball that can really sting you. But basically the dodgeballs that, you know, most people use now are a foam ball. So really, if you get hit, it's not going to hurt. It's not going to sting. It won't leave a welt on you. Plus, you have some rules where they can only get so close to your opponent. So we've kind of modified everything we do for the safety of the students, enjoyment of the students. So they have a good time with what we're offering.
All right. Roger's on the line from Waterloo. Hello, Roger.
Hello.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I just want to say that, you know, I completely agree with the caller earlier from Purdue University. You know, myself, too, as a graduate student at both a master's and doctoral level, I found, you know, that having an opportunity to play intramural sports just gave you that time away from studying, get some exercise, interact with people, almost relax you so that when you go back to studying, that you're so much more energized. It was just great, you know. I know at Northern Iowa, I played basketball, football, flag football, ultimate frisbee, everything. It was just great.
Did you find ever that it was a distraction from your studies, though, that you spent so much time on intramurals that you didn't have quite enough time to get ready for the next test?
No, I never let it get that way. I never knew any students that did either. And I was also in fraternity as an undergraduate, and you know, we had guys that, you know, really loved sports, you know, but they also had time to study and make sure they were on top of everything. I never found it as a distraction, and I never really knew anybody that did either.
And are you still in grad school?
Yeah, I'm still in as a doctoral student.
All right, what are kinds of intramurals are you playing now?
Right now, nothing. In the spring, see what's available and go back at it again.
All right. Well, Roger, thank you so much for your call.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot. And Wayne is on the line from Des Moines. He called 866-780-9100. Hello, Wayne.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
I was just going to make the point that for a lot of guys like myself who enjoyed playing high school sports, we were at a spot where we just weren't developed as athletes, you know, physiologically and really matured in our early 20s. And having intramural sports was kind of an outlet to enjoy the sports we played in high school, like basketball and stuff, at a level that we just weren't able to perform at while in high school. So that was one of the things that really made intramurals special for me when I was at the University of Nebraska.
And what sports did you play?
I played baseball and flag football, or basketball and flag football, excuse me.
All right. And Gary, do you see that a lot, that this is an opportunity for people who have really reached their physical peak to really compete at a high level?
Again, we have a wide variety of folks that just want to, you know, hang out, shoot around, play a little, be on a team. They're not really competitive. And then we got that other end, like your caller that, you know, develop late, wants to play, plays basketball all the time maybe. So it's the great thing about intramurals, where we have different skill levels. You can play at your own level. You can play as much as you want. It's just a great stress relief, you know, for the students here. You can't study 24/7, but, you know, basically intramurals, you play one game a week, so that's 1 hour out of your time, and it's a great way to relax, get out of the routine of that studying, and like your caller said, get right back at it.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Wayne. And what's in this for the university? I mean, you're running a pretty large program.
It's a huge program. And then if you throw in the rest of our recreation facilities for the open rec, the volleyball, the basketball times, the facilities we have, Iowa State takes recreation very seriously. And I think they see the value of students that can relax, enjoy themselves, enjoy being on campus, enjoy Iowa State, not just for its academics, but for the whole package. We are the third largest employer on campus, so a lot of the funds that we get from our student body that funds our programs goes right back to our students. So I think it's a win-win for everybody, and I think the university sees that and sees the value in it.
All right. Gary, thank you so much for your time. And I'm going to let David from Iowa City have the very last word on this. David, we only have 30 seconds left, but why do you think intramurals are important?
Oh, it was just one of the most incredible times of my experience at Iowa State. I played basketball, football, broom ball. I refed also basketball, and I just got to laugh. It's like I'm lucky I got out of there without a close head injury.
Right.
It was absolutely over the top nuts competition and great fun.
All right, David, thank you so much for calling. And Gary Greenlee, thank you so much for joining us today, Associate Director of Intramural Sports at Iowa State. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and we continue our exploration of alternative sports today. Now we move to professional wrestling, which is a kind of theater that started in small-town gyms and back rooms, and even at the height of the World Wrestling Federation, when you were watching Hulk Hogan or whoever on television, the grassroots professional wrestling culture did not disappear. Austin Bayless is a part of that culture. He's the proprietor of the Central Empire Wrestling Academy in Wellman, Iowa. Hello, Austin.
Good morning, Charity. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for coming in. And how did you get involved in professional wrestling?
Well, it's really neat. A friend of mine in elementary school, he was a big wrestling fan, and we were playing basketball one evening, and Monday Night Raw was about ready to go on air, and we ran to his house, and I watched wrestling for the first time and was hooked immediately, and it's just been a whirlwind from there. It's been a really neat adventure.
And did you and your friends try to act out the things that you saw on television back then?
I never did do any backyard wrestling. I was always looking into getting trained and pursuing, you know, official training. I never did get into backyard wrestling.
That's probably a good thing.
I know people that do. I know people that got into the business that way, but that was just something that I never had the opportunity to do.
And how did you get trained?
I trained in Northwest Iowa, in a small town called Algona. I would travel. I was a high school student. I started my sophomore year, and I would travel 4 hours each way on the weekends to train in Algona. And then I started to get booked around Iowa and across the Midwest, and I would train at different shows with different people. I would take seminars with different people. And to this day, I'm still learning and doing the seminars and asking questions. You never know enough.
You know, for a lot of us who don't follow this world, I have no idea how common this is. How many professional wrestling shows happen at small towns around Iowa in a year?
By the end of 2010, I hope that Central Empire Wrestling has put on about 25 shows. At the end of 2010, hopefully I'll have 75 to 80 shows underneath my belt as a company. I put on shows typically 1 to 3 times a month. Whether it's a community center, a county fair, or putting on a show of my own, probably myself speaking, I would say 1 to 3 times a month, but there are different companies throughout the Midwest that put on shows as well.
And you decided to found the Central Empire Wrestling Academy, so you actually train other aspiring professional wrestlers. When did you found the academy?
Well, I graduated from high school in 2006, and when it was time to move out of the parents' house and pursue an education, I needed to balance my money a little bit better and manage my money. And so I wasn't able to travel as far as I was when I was living at home. And so I decided that I was going to open up my own business and promote my own events. And at about the same time, there were several individuals that came to me looking to pursue the professional wrestling. And I opened up a training academy in my parents' machine shed. It was not fancy by any means. And we've came a long ways. We have a very respectable training facility now. It's neat to hear the people that started with us 4 years ago talk to the new people coming in about where they started and how good these new guys have it now.
So if I were to sign up to go through your training regime, where would I start?
Well, we currently have training on Thursday evenings in Wellman. Wellman's a small town about 45 minutes southwest of Iowa City. And we go over taking bumps in the wrestling ring, the entertainment aspect of the show, because it's probably – professional wrestling is probably the most unique and athletic form of drama that I've ever witnessed. It's an opportunity for people to play off the emotions of the crowd. There are superheroes and there are villains, and the villain's goal is to provoke the audience, and the superhero's goal is to earn the sympathy of the audience. And so that's what we go over at the CEW Academy, how to get your foot in the door in professional wrestling.
So do you try to teach the dramatic tricks of the trade?
We definitely go over the tricks of the trade. It's something that not anybody can do. You need to, before you go out and put on a show, you need to be prepared and how to entertain the crowd, how to work together with people. It's a very athletic event, and you need to know how to take care of your opponent, you know.
How about the physical aspect? How do you train people to engage in that kind of wrestling with hopefully without getting hurt?
Wrestling is very physical. Contrary to popular belief, there's not a spring underneath the ring. There's very little padding. It does hurt. There are a lot of bumps. There are a lot of bruises, and people do get hurt. You just hope that it's not you, and the training facility offers you that opportunity, you know, to practice on crash pads and work with talented veterans that know the tricks of the trade.
If you are a fan of professional wrestling, if you have gone to see some of these local shows, let us know why you're interested in it. What is it that appeals to you about professional wrestling? 866-780-9100. Maybe you're an aspiring professional wrestler. You can give us a call as well. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Now, the Academy is no longer in your parents' machine shed.
The Academy, no, it has moved into Wellman. We have a respectable facility in downtown Wellman. We have one ring currently set up. We have a weight room for people to work out. We have practice mats and different things. We also store our equipment at the facility. We have four rings currently that we can tour around the state and put on different shows with, depending on the size of the venue. Looking back on it, it's really neat because there are so many people that comment about in the early days there was no door on my parents' machine shed, so we would be training in the winter and it would be negative 10 in some cases, and the wind would be blowing in and it would be so cold, and everybody really believed in pursuing a future in professional wrestling, and they're so happy they did now. It's neat to look back on those stories. The first show that I ever had, I hauled my ring to the show on a hay rack going about 15 miles an hour.
Wow.
Yeah, we've came a long ways. We now have an enclosed trailer and different things. We look like a business now, not a dream.
Austin, you wrestle, and you wrestle as yourself at times, as Austin Bayless. Tell me who you are when you step into the ring.
When I step into the ring as Austin Bayless, I'm a baby face. In professional wrestling, a baby face is a term for a good guy. My goal is to get the sympathy from the crowd and to be somebody that they can relate to. I have another character that I enjoy doing, and it's a heel character under a mask.
This is Blue Rocket.
The Blue Rocket, yeah. He's a goofy guy that loves to make the crowd mad and do things that you would never believe. Wrestling's a an opportunity for you to go out there and do things and provoke the crowd into a frenzy. And the Blue Rocket definitely does that.
All right, so when you dress up as the Blue Rocket, what do you look like?
You would ask that. The Blue Rocket comes out in a mask and a Speedo, and the Speedo is pretty tight. And I'm not very flattering in the Speedo and the mask, and I dance around and do a lot of goofy things, things that I would not do as Austin Bayless. And that's actually a lot of fun, not being me, being able to step away and to be goofy and kind of let go and make the crowd mad, too, to be honest with you. It's a lot of fun hearing them boo me. When you walk through the curtain and you have 200 people booing you, that's a rush. It really is. It's a feeling unlike anything else I've ever experienced.
Since you're working the small town circuit, there's a good chance that you know a bunch of those people in the audience, right? So how does that feel when you walk out in your Speedo and you know the people who might be watching?
Well, you know, my girlfriend, she sometimes looks the other way and doesn't admit that we're dating. It's something that it's a business. It's entertainment. And if you see it that way, you'll appreciate it for what it is. I'm a professional and I go around. This is what I do. And the Speedo on a given night may be my job. And so I think most of my friends know that I'm the goofy Speedo wearing guy, and they understand that as a form of entertainment. So it's something I'm more comfortable with each and every time I go out there doing. Originally, you know, I didn't tell anybody that I was that guy. And if they would ask me, I would, you know, steer away from the question. But it's something, it's a role that I've came into rather nicely, I think.
All right. This is a business for you. Is this your primary business?
This is my primary business. I'm also a college student at William Penn. I'm a senior in the digital broadcasting field over there. I train on Thursday evenings. We put on shows on the weekend. If I'm not putting on a show of my own, I'm traveling somewhere wrestling for somebody else. I keep pretty busy. Wrestling, it's a hobby, but it's a business, and I really enjoy it.
Now, I understand that this is something that hooked you at a young age, and having your own academy, wrestling academy, is a dream for you. What is your aspiration? What do you hope to do with this, or do you hope to do something with it when you graduate from college?
I would really like to work behind the scenes. I would love to work in the video production offices with the WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment. I'd like to pursue wrestling in the future, but I'd like to do it with my major. You know, I don't know that I have a future necessarily in the ring, but I might behind the scenes, which is a total aspect of the showmanship of the product. So,
how does your family feel about this?
You know, it's interesting because initially my mother would have to sneak me into my grandma's house to watch wrestling, and my dad was not a fan at all. And my dad was deployed and he was set to go overseas, and he slowly started to kind of come around and support me and doing what I was doing and pursuing my dreams as long as an education was coming as well. And Central Empire Wrestling is a very family-friendly event. My parents are there at every event. My girlfriend and my mom are at the concession stand or selling the merchandise. My dad's at the door taking tickets. Every event, they're so supportive. They're great.
At this point, are you able to pay for your education with the money that you're raising, or does it just pay for your wrestling habit?
Well, it depends. Some nights it just, you know, might pay for a cheap meal. Some nights it might help me make a car payment. It just really depends. It's a very, in entertainment, you never know. It's a complete gamble. You might go into a town that the previous month you had 200 people, and you might go in a month later and have 70 people. You just don't know. It's really hard. I'm not paying for school with it. I know that. But I purchased a ring last week that I was able to buy off of the profits of the company.
A wrestling ring?
A professional wrestling ring, yep. And those are the rewards at this time.
What do you think draws those people to that gymnasium or that auditorium, those 200 people who come to watch professional wrestlers from local towns, you know, or nearby towns put on a show?
Wrestling is is drama. And you're looking for the conflict between the good guy and the bad guy. And you never know what type of show you're going to see from the good guy or the bad guy. And the more wild and crazy the performance in the ring is, the more the people in the audience are drawn into it. There's a guy here from Iowa City, actually, that he's a heavyweight champion currently in the company. He has a pink mohawk, and he's a bad guy. I tell you, he can get the crowd worked up. And then there's another guy that is just the top babyface in the company, and together they can create magic in the ring just based off of their acting.
How do you decide who is going to be the champion?
Who do I decide? Well, it just depends who's going to win at the end of the match. You never know.
I think you might know.
Well, sometimes I have a hunch, but you never know.
How, and maybe you don't want to give this away, but how scripted is a bout in the ring?
The wrestling in the ring, you need to know what you're doing. The performers, they do work together to ensure the safety of each performer. It's an event to where you're portraying conflict, but in real life, you're actually two professionals working together to entertain the audience and, you know, to come back next month. It's a business. So I don't know if that answers your question.
I think it does. What keeps you coming back now? I understand that this hooked you as a teenage boy. What is it about wrestling now that keeps you coming back week after week and giving up all of your free time to do this?
I absolutely love entertaining the audience, whether it's in the ring or behind the scenes, just putting the show together. You make a difference in people's lives, and you might not believe it when you're at your day job or, you know, struggling through a test, but it's really neat to walk out in public and people will come up to you and say, "Hey, you're the wrestler. I saw you wrestle, and I'm coming to your next show," or different things. Entertaining the crowd, really, it's probably like what a football player feels, you know, being in front of 70,000 people on game day. It's a rush. It's an adrenaline rush. I was never a star in high school. I was the bench warmer. I was the water boy. And in wrestling, it was just something that I came into nicely and met a lot of people, networked with quite a few different people, and it's something that I've hung around with. So
you look relatively unscathed sitting in front of me right now. What kinds of injuries have you sustained doing this?
I've had knee surgery. I was standing in the ring, actually just cutting a promo, so I'm happy you had me sitting down today. I was just standing in the ring and I collapsed. I don't know if that was a wrestling related injury, but it was at a wrestling show, and I'm sure the nagging injuries over time had something to do with that. My shoulder clicks occasionally. I've been relatively lucky so far, but you never know. You never know.
It's worth it though to risk your physical safety.
I know my limits, and I want to live a long, happy life with my family, and there are certain things I don't do. You won't see me flipping off the top rope to the floor.
All right. Well, that's good. Austin Bayless is the proprietor of the Central Empire Wrestling Academy in Wellman. He also wrestles as himself and his alter ego, Blue Rocket. Austin, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support from Russell Mansky in Ames and Sarah McCammon in Des Moines. You can send us email anytime at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe, and tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, treating alcoholism and other addictions. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.